The Vox Markets Podcast.
Welcome to Hot Stocks Live with Paul Hill here. Paul, where's your festive hat?
Yeah, sorry about that. It is a bit of a Christmas edition, isn't it? I love the background still. But it's been actually a pretty good last week. So yeah, your predicted Santa rally seems to have come to fruition. Started off by our mate out there in the FOMCT, Mr. Jerome Powell.
Yeah, well, do you know what? It was. Have you noticed? It seems to happen on a Thursday. I think if we go back, Vaccine Day was a Thursday, I think. And we had a wave a while back. And I said sometimes, when you get a turn in the market like this, it's almost like a tide coming in. You have one big wave that shows the change in tide, and it goes out a little bit, and then you have another big wave. And slowly but surely, I mean, you know, the AIM All Share is looking very good. And just looking at, you know, my portfolio this year has a decent return. Look at this. This is the low here, the AIM All Share, okay? And it rallied to this point, which was 720. I said, it needs to get above that, really, and start making more highs. And it did, and it even got above this previous support level. And look at that, yesterday, at 1.9%. And today, it hasn't come back. That's quite strong. That's a strong thing. By all means, by the way, if you join us live, feel free to comment, join in, hit that like button, subscribe to the channel, and all that stuff. But yes,
What's your portfolio return this year? After all the sort of trial and turmoil at the start of the year.
Well, I've been a bit cautious, but I've had four stocks that have done 100%. I'm up about 20-odd percent. I think it was.
Portfolio for the year.
Yeah,
but that's great. Well, give yourself a Christmas pat on the back, mate. You seem to blast through it without you're a bit sort of hesitant to say, but that's a great result. That is 20% up.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've had some cracking, and it's been that time where, listen, when you're two years into a bear market, you tend to be a little bit cautious. I do anyway. I think, right, because you don't want to see get into a stock and have another leg down. So I've been a bit cautious, and I haven't, the market hasn't completely turned. I think there's still a hell of a lot of way to go yet. But the fact that I don't think I had in the last year previously, I had a doubler basically. But I've had four companies do 100%, and so that shows to me the market's turning a bit. You are getting some decent rallies in stocks that are seemingly undervalued. At points I was sort of, when I invested in them, I thought, have I got this wrong? And it's not the sort of market that's wrong, And to what efficient markets? There's no efficient market. It's ruled by pretty much humans with emotions, and everyone seems to oversell, then it overbuy. So that's therein lies the opportunity. When it oversells, there's still a lot of cheap stocks out there that could do very, very well, especially in 2024, I think,
Yeah, I'm optimistic for next year, no doubt about it. I mean, coming back to that sort of old Buffettology, isn't it? It's sort of like the stock market is a voting machine in the short term, and then a weighing machine in the long term. And that's really sort of how it's planned out. We've had lots of fund manager redemptions this year. And it was quite interesting, actually, because I spoke to Paul Jordan and then on Monday, and then also interviewed Lawrence Hulse from Dowgate Wealth yesterday. And that will be published later on today. And they both said that they had started seeing as definitely a slowdown in redemptions. And if not, it was actually positively turning in that small cap area. So if that's the case, you're going to start getting animal spirits as long, on top of really super cheap valuations. And there's still lots and lots of good opportunities. And I'm hopeful as well, because most of my portfolio hasn't recovered yet in terms of, it's gone up a bit, but not huge amounts. But I still see significant upside for good value sort of GARPy type stocks.
Yeah, absolutely. I know. It's funny. You do see, sentiment can change very quickly. And you think when we've had sort of negative sentiment for a long time, you think it never will. But literally, you have a big up day like yesterday. And I said to, I think, Vadim Alexander, chatting to on Take the Stock, it's amazing how some of the stocks went up and I wasn't fully positioned in my stocks. And I want them to come back. And I hadn't had that feeling for a while. And I thought the last time I had that feeling was
that's
in the bull market.
That's getting greedy, that is, Justin.
I know. I thought
that is really
down.
Getting greedy.
Yeah, I thought slow down a bit. Because, what I don't want is, it's just take off without getting a full position.
Bring up another chart. You've gone through AIM, and that's a good sentiment there. Another good weather vane of sentiment. Bring up Taylor Wimpey or any of the house builders, because I think it's now hitting.
Highs.
Yeah, it is.
I get alerts on these. I put alerts on these. And if you look at Taylor Wimpey here, like I said, all-time pilot. You know, you see this Ranger, it failed to break out through that 128, 130 level, and now, woof, up there. It was a few others as well. It was like, I think, was it B-Dev as well, Barrett Developments, was, again, looked the same kind of chart, exactly the same kind of chart. Struggled at £5, broke up above £5. I think even sort of the one that's lagged a while, which is Persimmon, that's above Trinity Movie Average and moving up. They're all moving. I know it's a good sign, isn't it?
Yeah, and it is actually fundamental. There's a bit of logic behind it. I mean, you've had Jerome Powell. Let's go back to what he actually said on Wednesday night, and that's when the markets really started to rocket. The UK was closed, but the US took off then. But he basically said he was stopping raising rates and suggested that interest rates in the States were coming down by 75 basis points. And that sort of like rubber stamped what the market is saying, that the US 10-year is coming down by, or interest rates are coming down by just over 1% next year. And also it sort of rubber stamped what the market's saying for the UK, which is a similar sort of 100 basis points for next year, and the ECB. So when you do get sort of like the cost of capital decreasing for the right reasons, i.e. inflation's coming off and therefore the central banks don't need to stay quite as restrictive going forward as they have been in the past, then it means that the price of risk assets, which is equities, are going to go up. And those ones which are particularly interest rate sensitive, the house builders, auto stocks, discretionary spend, luxury items, everything went through the roof, and advertising and anything which was considered as sort of like, being mullered by high interest rates, had a significant bounce. And small caps as a sector, as an asset class, significantly, is supported on valuations because their cost of capital operating at the front end of the yield curve, because they don't get the sort of like cushioning effect of being able to hit the bond securities, the bond market, and therefore sort of term out their debt. They didn't get that. As soon as interest rates started to go up, they got hit. So in terms of interest rates are coming down, they're going to see the benefits immediately next year. And I really do hope, and I think this has been really sort of reinforced by a lot of the fund manager interviews, is that actually when it comes to raising money going forward, then it should start to get easier. You won't see the 12% convertible debt, which has been thrown around so often in the past sort of like 6 months on small caps. And if you get that, then valuations are just so attractive for good quality small caps. And I would say to people, if you've been out the market a lot, then you need to spend a lot of time over Christmas and the new year, looking seriously at your portfolio. And don't go so far out the risk curve. Don't throw the dice and hope for a double six. Just go for good sort of like singles and doubles, something which is, it's going to get through. If we do go still take a turn in the recessionary, we'll get through that, but we'll benefit from higher value, higher multiples, and also we'll come through any tougher times. If you do that strategy, you could easily see 50% returns over the next 12 months. If you just go sensible without really dialing up that risk measure.
Yeah. The best time ever to make money in the stock market is when, the bear market ends, pretty much. And I said yesterday on Twitter, when the rallies happened because the Fed was announcing sort of three expected rate cuts, and even Bailey wasn't, he was a bit more cautious, but it doesn't matter. I mean, American markets are what counts, pretty much. The biggest
he's jawboning anyway, Justin. He's basically just playing the cards as close. He's going to... If I was going to say any of the central bankers, he's going to be forced to go earlier, because unless he wants a deep recession, which he doesn't heading into a general election, he's going to have to reduce interest rates. He just doesn't want to do it quite yet because he doesn't need to. But as soon as you start seeing the labor force, the unemployment rate increasing, he's going to get a kicking from Parliament, even though I know he's supposed to be independent, to reduce interest rates. So if any of the central banks, I'm more convinced he's going to have to move before them and more sharply, because the economy will start rolling over unless he does.
Yeah. Well, I tweeted out yesterday. I said, if you are selling stocks right now, that are close to their lows right now, I said, do us a favor, read a bit of macro. I do think we are literally, the AIM-ALL share is up 10% from its lows, it gets to 20%, that's a technical bull market, and I can see it doing that. So I said, listen, Now is not the time to sell. You know, time to sell was like a year ago if you hadn't sold. I mean, you can benefit even if you're underwater a lot on some of these small caps. They will rally. You know, the tide will rise and it'll take the pain away. Now is not the time to sell. Really isn't, because the market is turning. I mean, look at this.
Okay. I'll give you an example on that one. Let's just run through an example, because one of the companies that I own came out with results this week. RWS. Stick that up on your ticker.
Yeah. Look at the five. Just quickly, the 5-year yield. Look at that. I mean, the high was there, right? Back in July, right? Yep. And then lower high. Then it really accelerated down, broke down to a new moving average, and now it's on that sort of previous resistance there. But look at the drop. It's gone from 4.9 to 3.7. You know, these are inversely rated to the market. They are rolling over. All the bond yields are coming down. It's like, you know.
And I
thank you for pointing out, say, pay more attention to bonds.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Really boring. But now I do. I've got alerts on all of them.
So, yeah, and that's why, if you're looking for a fixed rate mortgage on the swap market, look at that. It's come down by 100 basis points. It makes your affordable mortgages much easier for people to buy houses. So hence the house builders have rocketed. But anyway, go to RWS. Here's a classic one. You just to illustrate what you just the point you make. It's come, if you're, you know, to avoid selling it sort of like, you know, at the low. Okay.
Yeah.
Last 2 weeks, well, basically about a month ago, it came out with a profit warning, and then it reiterated the profit warning last week. Okay. So the shares sold off twice on profit warnings.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's what you would have expected. Look how fast it came back. And that's the point you're making, and I just want to illustrate it. Don't sell at the bottom, because even though companies are coming out with profit warnings, they can rebound quite quickly on sentiment, because people are looking through that and saying, actually, the macro environment is improving. And this one basically does, you know, translation software, et cetera, for lots of, you know, sort of like commercial interest, but both in regulated industries and also for patents and also for sort of websites and stuff like that across multiple languages, about 150 odd or so. So it's in a nice space, but it's being hit because of digital advertising and just the economy, discretionary spend being cut off. So it's not surprisingly, its results weren't great. But the point I'm raising here is that even when you see when stock prices come off, it doesn't mean they don't come back quite quickly. And if you're willing just to take that initial pain, which frankly any long-term investor should be able to do, actually there's going to be a lot more upside. So I'm with you, Justin. I think that's a great example of the point that you were making.
Well, look at that. I mean, that is essentially, it's like trying to, you know, push an inflatable ball under the water. And that's what you get, like a cork.
Yes,
you know?
So you're right.
This is a range there. It's basically, it's bounced off this, what is it, 227 level several times. Maybe profit warning came down, broke it, rallied strongly. That's the pushing the ball in the water, bounced back up, came back into the range. Then another trading update, like you said, bounced back down, came back up in the range. It doesn't want to go down there. It wants to come back up. So it'll be back in this range for a while, and sooner or later, probably the announce, maybe, you know, it's looking better going ahead, and it'll punch back up above this level again. It'll break up. So, I mean, you know, it's come down a lot locked, but
I think that is
bouncing
saying,
off the lows.
I think that is basically like the house builders, essentially. You know, it benefits when you get a less sort of like severe, you know, recessionary, you know, optionality, and you've got interest rates coming down. Therefore, there's going to be more discretionary spend, particularly on corporates. It's got a reasonably good moat, and it's exposed to AI training and stuff like that, and all that AI market. So, you know, if you come out with a profit warning and you end the week higher than when you started it before the profit warning, you've got to look at that and say, that's saying something.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, a couple of comments here. Ben, happy Christmas. This is the last one, of course, before Christmas. And Ben says, this is quite a good thing. I saw you send a message this morning, Paul, at like, I think it was 3:59 or something on Slack. But what do you guys, because that shows how obsessed you are with the markets getting up early. What do you guys do in the Christmas period when the markets are shut? Research.
I hope I just look forward to when they open again myself. But I go over my portfolio and look at opportunities. Yeah, I totally agree. I'm addicted.
I'm not going to say what it is now, right? But I invested in a new stock this week because I haven't got a position in it. And literally, I saw a lady who you interviewed, a fund manager on LinkedIn, and mentioned this company. Thought, that rings a bell. So I started doing some research on a Sunday night. I filled out all my spreadsheets, went through some news. I liked it. this is undervalued. They came out with a trading update on Monday morning, and literally it rocketed. I did get a little position, but it's annoying. But that I like that. I do love researching a company. When you find something, you have to dig through. It's like mining for diamonds. You dig through a lot of dirt, a lot of rubbish, you know, to get somewhere, to find something. And when you find it, oh, hang on a sec. And sometimes you go with lower conviction. Maybe that's quite good. But, you know, sometimes you are. But I'll be doing that over Christmas, you know, hoping to find some gems, really. This is Rockhild. Paul Scott has done extremely well on Plexus POS. I bet you hold Plexus, didn't you? He has done really well. Paul, TICAP, still looks incredibly cheap. I may top up using my position. So is it TCAP? Is it ticker?
Yeah, it's basically it's that interdealer broker. Yeah. I mean they're dead cheap. I mean the last time let me get the I think they're what they're trading on. Let me just see. Even though they're at what they're about what 95 are they at the moment?
195. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I still think they've got a fantastic. Let me just put that into my model here.
Yeah. Oh, I say you've got a model, a live model going on.
Yeah, no, I've got it live so I can chuck it
what
in.
Do you, just, what do you use?
That's got No. Don't worry about that. Right, I've
what
got
What do you a, mean? I've got don't a, worry I've got about a, that. It's I've secretive.
A, I know, yeah. No, I've just got Excel. I've got a target price of 290.
Oh, spreadsheet. I love that.
Target price of 290. Even at 195, it trades at a PE of less than 7. And I think it's got a dividend yield of over 5% as well. It's cash generative. And clearly, as the markets sort of like, you know, improve and there's interest rate volatility, it's going to make, you know, it's going to make hand over fist. And the thing which is really nice, it's got this, it's got data business called Parameter Solutions that probably in 2024 will be spun out of TPI cap. And that will be a really high value, you know, sort of data business, not too dissimilar actually from sort of like the London Stock Exchange, because that's Retinif. And but this one does for the Parameter does for OTC rather than the Retinef, which does sort of like listed securities. And on that basis, I mean, that could easily go 15, 20 times EBITDA. So if they do that, then you'll get a, you know, effectively Parameter will be worth more than the whole of the market cap, even though TPI cap has improved. So, yeah, I would definitely continue to hold. It's dead cheap, pays a great dividend. And as soon as they can, you know, realize or spin out that Parameter business, you're going to see a significant tick up. And I would highlight, I'm speaking to Christopher Mills on Monday. And that's a TPI cap is one of his holdings and it's on the agenda. So I'm really looking forward to hearing him. But yeah, I am absolutely myself. I am not selling it. And it's a good, solid hold, that one.
Yeah. Do you know what? That's looking good. Because do you know what I like about that? Literally, you can see there, you know, all the way down, I've drawn a line there and it hasn't broken that. And the times that I broke that 200-day moving average, and this is the previous resistance, broke above that, a little bit of congestion, broke up above there. That's a really aggressive rally. Sometimes when that happens, you have to have a pullback and consolidate, and it's doing that. But now look at that previous high. It's trying to break that again, £2. Mm. It may need a little breather, but that's looking good. That's a lot of strength there. Like I said, higher lows, breaking up, needs to make £2. But I mean, like I said, previous resistance, that's looking very good. But you see the aggressive bounce from a really oversold position then, and it went from, quid, it doubled. Literally, you know, from July to October, that's just oversold, and then and now it's
look at the 5-year highs.
Yeah. Wow, look at that. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, that shows the optionality. It's got lots of data, and it still is in a very good position. So let's just wait and see. Now, I've got a question for you, actually, from an investor.
Go on.
MB says, could you ask stock pickers, i.e., you, to convince us that IUKD, which I think is your ticker for the dividend fund, is the best choice for a single UK fund compared against the quality tilted new ETF UGRW. So I think he just basically wants to know how come you came up with this one rather than any other sort of like, you know, market dividend index sort of stocks, ETFs?
Well, literally. Good point. I mean, I spend when I'm looking at funds, I tend to just look at Vanguard, BlackRock. They are the two largest, and I know it's a bit silly, really, but this is the UK dividend fund. So you can see all the performance there. But I look at also, you know, the total expense ratio is 0.4. So it's not, you know, that expensive. There are cheaper ones out there, like Vanguard. I think you can get 0.07 for their trackers. But the where's the dividend here? So it's an averaging 12-month dividend, about 5.26. And the expense ratio is there. And like I said, I wanted UK exposure to bigger stocks. I like UK. I haven't got my son's in an S&P 500 tracker, and that's doing very well, doing better than my dividend. But so essentially, the dividend yield here is 5.26, and the expense ratio is about 0.4. I did quickly look at that one there, and the dividend yield, because it's more mini American stocks, they don't pay as big a dividend, but you're going to get more upside, I suppose. But having said that, if it's exposed to, I suppose, it is Microsoft, so they, again, it's 2.2%. I think dividend yield here. So the dividend is lower. You may get capital growth, like I said, as well. But it's holding a lot of the big stocks in America. What's your thoughts on those? Do you think we've seen evidence that the rally is, there we are, Microsoft, Apple, Johnson & Johnson, it's got all these dividend payers. But I think the average yield on this is about 2.3% dividend yield. I want a dividend. I'm not going for capital growth because I cover that off in my own stock selections. But you probably will get a better growth in this. The costs are the same, but the dividend yield on the UK one, UKID, is better. Like I said, I'm not going for growth on that. I'm going for dividend yield. If I want growth, that's individual.
Yeah, and the advantage to go for the UK one is you get it in sterling. You don't get it in dollars because you have to pay a currency on. And also, you're going to get withholding tax on that dividend as well. So, I'm with you. Go with the UK ETF, makes total sense.
Here's a quick chart. This is quite interesting. I'm putting a couple of lines on here because you see this, you know, a series of lower highs. This is FTSE 350, highest yielding dividend payers, essentially. And you can see here, you know, broke this line pretty much here. And now even that previous resistance, it's breaking up. So it's nice to see the indices are moving up as well. You know, all of them are pretty much, you know.
Yeah, no, I agree. Another one for you. Nicholas Vaughan says, what are the two most important figures on the balance sheet that you look for? I know I've got two, but which sort of figures on the balance sheet that you look for, Justin?
Well, I've messed around this a lot, and you know, I've adjusted what I look at in spreadsheets and all that. But I think I saw your reply, and I agree with you. What I monitor on my spreadsheet is, you know, cash, net debt, and also the change in that. You know, so and you want to know, you know, is there debt serviceable? So I do look at so gross gearing, but I also look at the current ratio as well. So, but I do think cash is the most important thing.
Yeah.
Are they in a cash position or net debt position? And also, how has that changed from last year? Because you know they can manipulate a lot of metrics, but when it comes down to it, you know, how is it? Has the cash gone down? Why has it gone down? If they're investing in something, fair enough. But I mean, if it's not, it's through operations. You've got to look at that. So, yeah, very important cash there. And also just the gearing. How much, if they've got debt, how much do they have? Because when I look at companies, I look at top, you know, I look at small companies. So I want growth. That's the most important thing. And I look at value. That's second most important. And, but in there is health and efficiency. And like I said, it's not going to, if it's extremely bad health, then it's going to hold the share price back. But you don't have to pay, you know, a huge amount of attention to that. As long as it's okay, as long as our growth and value should do well. But if you've got really bad health, if your balance sheet, if they've got a lot of debt, it won't perform, you know, as simple as that. So you've got to look at that.
I think you just, if it's got a big, you know, sort of debt balance, then have a look at the interest cover ratio on the cash it generates to see what it's actually paying and whether it's going to breach those banking covenants. And likewise, also look at when the debt profile matures, when you've got to basically pay it back over a certain set period, or whether it's actually, you know, just an RCF. So have a look at that if you've got the concerns over the debt. And then the other thing to have a look at is the net tangible book, because a lot of companies list all their assets at historical, because that's the accounting requirement, you know, what you purchased at. And you might find it does have some buildings or some other assets in there that actually have almost been written off or have bought 20 years ago, and then maybe freehold or something like that they can sell off. So, for instance, you know, you've got these classic sort of, you know, you've got things like Michelmers own sort of clay pits that they can use for housing developments that once it's vacant, they can basically sell it on, whether it's for other industrial properties or whether it's for in residential or even landfill, whatever it is. So you get this inherent sort of like assets on balance sheets that are worth looking at that can be monetized in the event of than being able to do that. So those would be the two ones that are.
For example, here's Future PLC. And I do like that. I've been stalking this for a long time, okay? And this is a 6 month results. It's just information. I plug all the figures in here. So all the figures get plugged in and they get displayed here pretty much. And you can see here they are, you know, first of all, almost the enterprise value is, you know, they've got debt more than cash. But you've got to look at then, and look at the previous debt. It's gone down from 421. So in my mind, that's quite good. They've gone down to 421 million, 387s. They are paying that down. But also, just the, you know, operating loss there and operating cash flow. I mean, if a company's got a lot of debt, and this is negative, that's a little bit worrying because they can't service that debt, you know. And then I look at growth. They haven't grown. That's the problem of Future. They've been a growth stock for a long time. And, you know, of course, we're going through a hard period where people are trimming their belts and not paying as much on advertising rates. But look at the value here. You know, bloody, you know, sorry. It's all green. You know, you can't get better value than that. Then you go to health and you do look at cash. You go, okay, you've got net debt there. Gross gearing and current ratios, a little bit worrying. But like I said, I'm not worried too much about it. The efficiency is very good, you know, good margins. And so I'm not too worried because they can pay that down quite quickly. And that, in fact, that's what the CEO said, they're going to be doing that and expanding the US. I quite like that. They're expanding the US. He said, and he's from the US, and he said, listen, you know, we have 2-to-1 sales people, UK versus US. Doesn't make any sense. The playbook will work in the US, and yet it's a 7 times bigger market. So we are going to start to expand in the US, and he's from the US. So I think Future, not, you know, not yet the share price sticking in a bit of a knock, but I think that's one play for the you know, for 2024 will do well. I mean, look at that, it got hammered recently, but it's trying to pump up here.
Can I unfortunately douse this concept a bit for you? I'm going to be the Grinch of Christmas, okay, and give you the bear case, right? Yeah. Now, I don't know if you've seen, but Google announced their new AI search engine, which I think they called something like, I can't remember what it was anyway.
Gemini.
Well, thank you. That's yes, they announced it this week, and it was always
it was a con, wasn't it?
It was a con, but they're going to get it done, and they're going to launch it next year, okay? Yeah. Now, what that means, is that they're going to chuck up basically an AI-generated discovery result, rather than a whole set of 10, 20 links, some of them sponsored and some of them right, okay? Now, for somebody like Future, okay, it has most of its sort of traffic, okay, which is, you know, its own, it's derived from its own content, its own data, okay? But about 30 to 40% traditionally for the publishing industry, and this is its own publisher, like all the, you know, the newspapers like the FT, the Wall Street Journal, the Daily Mail, and all this sort of stuff. They get about 30 to 40% of their first line traffic through Google's search engine on links. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, if they're not producing those links and they're only giving one result through Gemini, okay. These publishers are not going to get 30 to 40% of their traffic through that search engine, the old search engine style. So regardless, because they create their own content, their first line content, that's not going to get the traffic. It's going to lose 30 to 40%. If it does that, it's going to lose a shed load of advertising. So the bear case on digital publishers, if you've got content, even if it's really good content, is that you could lose a shed load of traffic once they switch effectively the Google search to Gemini, you know, search. And if they do that, then I just would not be going anywhere near Future, to be perfectly honest.
He does talk about that on his presentation, actually. He talks about, you know, the change in Google algorithms and AI, and they are leveraging AI. And they said, we still want to be, you know, best content providers for our area. But what they're also focusing on now is social search and social branding. So hooking up with brands on social media and not focusing on, focusing extremely on search. So they are aware of that. And they said that it's a very massively under-leveraged area for us. We've got a huge social media following across all our prints. And there's lots of brands who want to hook up with us and do promotions across that area. So they are aware of that and the change. And there's always these guys are tech guy. So, you know, he knows about AI. They're already using it. And so I can't think, and also, you know, you've got to say, you know, with a PE of what, 5, it's a lot of worry is priced in, you know. So I think the good ones will work it out and sort of, you know, you have to find a way in business. That's it. You have to evolve. And they are evolving it very quickly. And he's aware of that, you know. So,
yeah. All I would say is that the E is wrong on that, in my view, with a PE of 5. And if you're going to lose 30 or 40% of your traffic through search for next year, you've got a fixed cost base. Okay, you can take some of it out, no doubt about it. But the marketing that you're going, extra marketing spend that you're going to have to do to draw more people to your site is going to be enormous, rather than actually have that sort of like the direct Google search. So yeah. I just think there's so
it's an area I know of concern, definitely, and it's one. I mean, that's why I'm not in there.
There's easier money to be made elsewhere than try and go up the sort of like the digital publisher market, because if those search results disappear and you have one number from, you know, one result from Gemini, then frankly it's going to blitz digital publishers. It really is.
Do you know what company that will benefit from Google's? I've received, so I've got adverts on YouTube for my channel and on my ShareBickers website. I get Google updates, you know, on the advertising, and they're now starting to talk about deprecated cookies, third-party cookies, and that is going to be huge, like I said, because and it's about contextual advertising, which is what Silver Bullet Data do, you know, AI contextual advertising, and you can see a shift now, and it's going to be huge in 2024. It's going to be slowly happening, but like I said, you know, Safari have done it, Firefox have done it, but they don't make them the majority of the market. You know, Google Chrome, 65% of the market is owned by Google Chrome. So when they start deprecating cookies, it'll be huge for, you know, advertising agencies to change over that. And so Silver Bullets, I did actually contact the CEO, and I said, I screenshotted the email I got from Google, took my contextual advertising now, not, you know, third-party cookies. And I said, I assume this is quite significant. He said, yes, it's happening finally, because they've been talking about doing it for years, Google, but because they get so much money from it, they've been dragging their heels. And so they've tested other things, they're trying to work out other things. But it's going to be a seismic shift in digital advertising, not using third-party cookies. Huge, absolutely huge. You know, they've relied on this for so many years. And Silver Bullet does it provide that solution to advertisers where they don't have to use, they can get a good return on their investment, but not use third-party cookies. So I think that's an area worth looking at. It's themes, isn't it? Something that, you know, I know you're good at this. You do look at themes and thinking, okay, what's going to change? What's going to get worse? What's going to get better? You know, who's in the sweet spot here, and you look for companies like that, which is a good idea, you know. And I would say the biggest themes there.
Yeah, I mean, just to add to Silver Bullet, okay, I would say yes, they're going to get a silver bullet from the cookie, but you know, basically chains at Google. I get it, okay. They're going to get a golden bullet from the change to get Gemini, because it not only restricts companies like, you know, Future, you know, in terms of not being able to track people's cookies, so they need help from Silver Bullet. But actually, they're just going to need massive help, full stop, in terms of getting traffic. And if Silver Bullet basically can, if their software is good enough, just more broadly, to bring new traffic to digital publishers through their software, then the sky, they're going to get a golden bullet on top of it. So they're going to get a silver bullet, and then they're going to get a golden one quickly once Gemini.
I don't know if you ever had this, but this is one of those companies I was researching, and the penny sort of dropped. It must have been at 3 a.m. or 2 a.m. And I woke up and I thought, I'm going downstairs. I went upstairs and started looking at it and doing more research. I thought, that is going to be huge. But I don't think people understand how big the digital advertising market is. It literally, currently is about over $700 billion spent on digital advertising, a lot of it in America. And they are based basically in America, and they are being used by top three of the biggest publishers in the world. You know, they've been using publishers, WPP, Omnicom, and they are giving them rave reviews on their 4D AI product. And I'm thinking, that is massive. And it's one of those companies, one of the first small companies, I want to get a 10-bagger. I want to see a company that can scale, and literally, and this is a company with a product that's, you know, digital, it can scale very quickly. You know, it literally, they can plug it in.
You're getting greedy again, Justin.
No, but listen, one of the things you should always do, I think, if you want to, I don't want to, if I want to go like, you know, 10-20%. I can get that in a fund pretty much, and I don't. I've got money in a fund, but what I want is these outsized, risk measured opportunities that can deliver multiples of your return. And this is the kind of company I do like. It can scale very quickly. It's in a very big pond, big money. It's got a very good product. And like I say, it's plugged into these huge platforms that generate billions. And so if it starts working, I think it can do very well. And the growth is there. The growth is already there. It's early doors, but they've got very good growth. And so that will come through, I think, even faster in 2024. But themes.
Another theme, okay? Let's do for Cornerstone FC. So that's CSFS, I think it is. It's right into your wheelhouse.
Let me tell you, I bought it about a month back, and then I went up a bit, and I thought, I'm not sure. There's something about it. And I got out, and then you talked about it, and it went up like a massive again. I should have held on to that.
Stick the chart on. It's right in your wheelhouse. You're not too late, I don't think either.
I did take a few, and
at least you made a few bob anyway, heading into Christmas. Yeah. But I think this, what happened basically, I interviewed 2 weeks ago Paul Scott, who's a real sort of like astute investor, and he highlighted it to me. These guys are in international payments, Forex, etc. And
I mentioned to you, and I said the guy from X Equals, and COO of Equals,
James Hitman used to work for Ian Strafford Taylor at Equals. I think he was their COO. He left about 2020, I think it was, and I know Ian was a bit disappointed because he really rated James, and he used to do all the M&A for him, I think. And then he went away, did some software stuff in payments in an Irish business, and then got headhunted. I think it was about 18 months ago to sort of turn this around. And what he basically has done, it started its journey sort of like essentially it used to do white label sort of Forex software and systems for people. It didn't really work. Anyway, he came on board and realized that there's this massive upside. So he sort of like thought, right, okay, let's go direct to the actual customer. And they sort of started off with sort of like looking after sort of high net worth individuals and small companies, really doing a lot of sort of like, single purchases and single transactions in foreign currency. And that was working well. What he's done is basically right-sized the cost base and effectively he's modeled the technology on Equals. And so he's got multi-currency IBAN accounts, etc. He's going to add cards onto the technology stack next year. And what he's done basically is shifted it more from a sort of like an Argentex model, which was a sort of like a sort of white glove, very high touch business. So Argentex have about sort of 90% plus of sort of like, customer communication and putting Forex through, and only 10% or 5% or so of straight through purchasing. These guys are 70-30. So 70% is still the white glove sort of like, concierge type services and help people do the treasury management for small, and 30% is straight through processes. And ultimately Equals is about 90% straight through processing and 10% sort of like individual. So there's the platform. So he's modeling on this platform approach that Equals has been so successful at. And he's investing into the technology stack. He's right-sized the cost base. It's now profitable. It's cash generative. And they're going to look to expand abroad. So I think they've got sort of Canada on these sites. They've got the UAE, and they've got somewhere else, Singapore, I think it is, somewhere out in Asia that they're looking to do over the next few years. So it's very much a sort of like what worked for him, in his days of Equals, he's doing exactly the same. And they're still really, really cheap. I mean,
I was looking at that. I covered them on my webinar, Investment Club, quite a few times, and I've done spreadsheets. And I said, this is literally, well, at the time, it was literally less than one-time sales. And I said, the margins of the business are very good, decent. They're really Equals. And so this is very cheap, and they're growing very quickly. This is very cheap. And I don't know what it was. I think a lot of companies come out with Argentex profit warning. I think Record come out with a profit warning. And I thought, there's a lot of, I think it was, who was it? Alpha effect? So someone Alpha, was saying, was saying there's a lot of competition now in this market, or people are coming into it. So I thought, and do you know when you're not, I don't know what it was, I just wasn't 100% convinced. So I just sold, but I was up a little bit. And then I saw you tweet about it. the other week took was Paul Scott, and he jumped up again. I thought, maybe I should have held that.
But essentially, it makes 60% gross margins, 10% free cash flow yield, or all there and thereabouts, even after the reasonable, you know, jump in the share price. And Shore Capital reckon that it, you know, it's worth 50p, you know, per share. But they're growing their top line like for like at 20% per annum. And as I say, it drops through to the bottom line. So in a real sort of like, you know, strong growth, and they've been upgrading expectations. And they've got another, I think they've got another trading update in January, which is when I'm hoping to interview James, and everybody ought to see him. But they're really on a roll. And
this is what I like to see. Yeah, look at that.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd love to see that comment in a statement materially ahead of current market expectations. Because what happens is, this is what happens. You should look for some, I mean, you should do some research on companies releasing these, because you tend to get companies, you know, don't release one good update. It's the same with the bad updates. It doesn't come out in, you know, one off. You have quite a few of them happening. And so you get materially ahead. It'll rise on the day. Then, you know, and you know if it's a trading update in a few months' time, for, you know, the final results will come out. So if it drops down in between the trading update and the final results, you know, take a little bit more, because you know you pretty much know what the figure is going to be. It's going to be quite good, you know. So there we are.
And I mean, look at that just a bit earlier on in that sort of sentence. Yeah, just a bit further up. Okay, the group is pleased. Very strong trading has continued. I mean, that says everything, basically.
Yeah. And I see it. And part of me thought, why didn't, obviously, the increased competition amongst things, but I thought this company, obviously, very small anyway, undervalued pretty much where they are. And they don't need a big share to move the share price, because they are so small. Mm. And so, you know, where the other ones maybe, you know, were literally, you know, whether or not sort of completely saturate the markets, but you know, the bigger you get, the harder you get to move the dial. This doesn't need that much, does it, really, to move the dial? Because it's just, you know, and so they are, that's probably why it was different. But I just worried about that area of the markets getting more competitive, you know. Yeah. So,
well, I would say you've got to put it in the context of the UK economy. Okay, it's basically not growing at all. In fact, it decreased GDP last month. So this is growing top line 20%. So it's, you know, it says everything that there's strong demand across the industry for this type of product. And then the investment thesis is really sort of underscored by James, who knows what he's doing. He's got a very clear strategy to take this platform, add on technology, get the international expansion on top of it, increase the level of straight through processing, and continue to, you know, look after his customers really, really well. He knows what he needs to do. He's doing it. He's right-sized his cost base. That 60% gross margins, any incremental pound is dropping through to the bottom line, which he can reinvest. So it isn't as though we're breaking new ground. He knows what he wants to do. The company is absolutely knocking the ball out of the park, and there should be no reason why, you know, given the size of the market and that the market's significantly expanding even in the recessionary times, why that isn't going to continue. So yeah, I could easily see, even though it's jumped up a lot, I could easily see the share price in 12 months tracking towards that 50p, because Shore Capital is going to be increasing its expectations, I'm pretty damn sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Comment from Alan. Despite two major share publications advising to take profits on good, this is a seller's force and the price down 20%. The rebound has just been strong, no doubt, creating FOMO among sellers. Yeah, I got to say, Good Energy was the biggest position in my portfolio until recently. It came back, a couple of stop losses kicked in, and I did sell a bit. But look at the share price, it's just bounced back up. It doesn't bother me that I was over, like, it was like this was 22% of my portfolio after the rise here, and I thought when it gets asked to get that size, it was a bigger than my fund. I thought, so it did rally. I put stop losses in. When I'm at that level, I don't want to lose any profit. So a couple of stop losses did trip out for me, and so now I've got, you know, I've got about, I think it's about 6-7% still, but it's bounced straight back up. You know, it's that's very strong. That, and I do still like them a lot. That's why I haven't done them all.
How much cash have you got left?
About now, 40%.
Okay, yeah. Well, it gives you plenty of firepower. I'm glad you're in a nice position. I'm fully invested. I've got nothing. But I might have something if Equals gets bounced out, you know, gets taken out.
That's share been strong. Isn't it a 52-week high, didn't it, Equals?
I mean, the thing is with Equals, a lot of it's, you know, they've now got a decent bid premium into it. So I would say let's wait and see. That's saying to me is that people on the know are think that they're betting on this takeover happening, and let's wait and see. So I wouldn't be buying on the basis of a takeover, but no. Clearly the market knows more than probably I do. And yeah. I'm just doing what I've said. I'm just going to sit and wait and see what happens. We should know within the next 10 days.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of people say things about companies that partner, not equals, just companies that I'm investing in this company, it should be taken out. You should never invest on that principle ever. You should try and buy a good businesses, because good businesses undervalued could get taken out anyway. And that's, you know, if it's a very good business and it's doing very well in its sector and it's undervalued, other companies will buy it, you know, but to never go there with the intention that this will get taken out, because you don't know what, you know, you could be waiting for years for that to happen. But but if you invest in a good business, it'll keep performing essentially.
We've got one question from Stephen asking about us MedTech, and one of the companies, he's got one couple for you as well, but one that we'll start with is Avacta. They came out with some pretty big news on Wednesday in terms of their data release for the AVA 6000 phase 1A trial. And basically what the conclusion was that absolutely the drug and the precision platform are doing exactly what they anticipated it would do, i.e. cleave the doxorubicin, which is the chemotherapy, in the locality of the hard tumor, that's basically then, you know, doing it in the right place and not creating any safety or toxicity problems anywhere, particularly in the body. So they came out with a lot of data. On the safety side, they only had, they grade the different sort of like side effects into various 1 to 4, and the most severe is 3 and 4. And they had less than 10% of patients through their trial so there's less than 10% who had grade 3 and 4, compared to the doxorubicin, which basically has sort of anyway 30 to 50%. And that was at sort of higher dosage levels as well. So the safety is absolutely great. It really is good. And the efficacy, they came out with one particular example, was a 59-year-old male who saw 65% shrinkage in the size of his tumour, which is a fantastic Christmas present for him, no doubt about it, particularly when the whole trial, the phase 1A trial, is not designed to show efficacy. So this was really sort of like great. Yeah. Yeah, there aren't that many on the, you know, sort of soft tissue sarcoma. So you've got basically positive on the efficacy. You've got very good safety tolerabilities. Next steps are such that they're going to do, because the safety and tolerability is so good, they're going to do a faster frequency, to a fortnightly frequency of dosing for the prodrug, pro-doxorubicin, out in the States, to see whether they can then get a more optimum level of dosage and frequency and cycles for the pivotal phase 2 trial, which should hopefully start the sort of back end of 2024 in sort of 12 months' time. They'll get data from this sort of like fortnightly testing regime probably around about mid next year. But all in all, it absolutely rubber stamps the drug and the precision platform. It works. Mm. What's also interesting from a shareholder perspective is that, you know, it's taken 2 years to get to this stage. But when it comes to sort of valuation, there was a new sort of analyst report from Trinity Delta. And I'd highlight, people have a look at this because they can get it down. And then when it comes to sort of the valuation, I think they put a sum of the parts when they put down of £2.37, okay? And that's got a risk-adjusted level for AVA 6000 of 24p and the precision platform of about 105p, yeah? Okay, that's all fine and dandy. But then you look at the success probability that they've put it down at only 10%. So what that's saying is, is that they reckon from a risk basis, the 10% probability, the whole precision platform, including AVA 6000, is only worth about 130p. Yeah. Now let's put it let's look at it through a different lens. If that 10% that their assessed probability is wrong, and it actually does come to, you know, fruition, and they reach the same level of peak sales as expected, then actually the valuation could be 10 times higher than their 130p. Okay, I'll just repeat that. Mm. If that 10% success rate actually happen, then they come to market, and the whole platform could be worth effectively you know, over £10. Yeah, £13 it could be worth. So it's 10 times 130. So,
yeah, mega, yeah.
Absolutely.
What happened with it? So what were people expecting? Why was the sell-off? Was it just a liquidity event, or were people expecting some other news, or what? Well, why did it sell
off? I don't know. There's lots of I mean, I've actually tried to dig into it. I mean, there's a whole bunch of different theories, but it doesn't matter. If you're a long-term investor, we come back to that sort of the stock market is a voting machine in the short term and a weighing machine in the long term. If, you know, we get success, and let's be clear about it, that phase one trial says everything that the platform works, yeah? If they can get through this phase two pivotal, that's it. They can basically then, you know, start looking for commercialization partners and all this sort of stuff, because the phase three is going to be a really, should be a ho-hum type of event, simply because, you know, we know doxorubicin works, and if we know the precision platform and that fat cleaving also works in phase two and is effective, then you're there basically. So the 10% looks far too conservative to me, because that's based on industry standards that assume, you know, you've got to do full phase three trials, whereas I don't think this will be the case, because I think the pivotal, the real decision point is going to be the phase two trials. So I think the 10% is totally wrong myself. If I was going to guess, I'd say it's probably closer to 50%. I really don't know, but I'd say at least 50%, because it's demonstrating already efficacy better than expected. Nobody was expecting them to show that. And the safety is off the charts. It's really, really good. So as it's designed, it says, to me, it says everything. But I think if you're prepared to, they reckon the first peak, the first sales for AVA 6000, if things go to plan, should be 2026. But really, once you've then got through, started getting data from the pivotal phase two, which will be 2025, then actually I think this will really roar. And once we get close to that, I mean, I'll just repeat that, okay? The AVA 6000 and the precision platform could be worth, according to Trinity Delta, if you don't use a 10%, if it was a success, could be worth £13. Shows you the upside. So the management team's done a great job. You can't fault the scientific, you know, sort of like significance of what was presented. But yeah, the shares sold off, and I would just ignore it myself.
He asked for Destiny, didn't he? I think.
He asked for Destiny and Polarian.
Polarian, it's hard work there. But I don't know Polarian. I do old Destiny, but I mean, you can see it's a nice little rally there. I mean, the news I want, I don't really care. I mean, you know, they've got funds, they've got a quality board, they've got excellent. Like I said, these are now, you know, going to phase three, two assets going to phase three. One is funded, and that's got $1 billion in sales pretty much. The second one, I think, you know, XF73, you know, could be blockbuster. It could be, it's still going $2 billion in the US alone, and they're looking for a deal on that. So I think that deal will come with a nice cash advance. I think it should be around like 10 million probably. That's what suggestions have been. And then, of course, upside. But that's what it's waiting for, is that. But nevertheless, they're still advancing the M3 platform.
The one was Polarian. Just quickly on Polarian.
They didn't update. It's almost one of these stocks where it's got such negative sentiment now. 14 million. I mean, it's a little bit, they are advancing with, they said,
who are you going to take out another shot at this one? Because you know this better than the back of your hand, isn't it?
Yeah, there's something. Oh, they're progressing with Philips and all that stuff. I think it's one of the. It's a little bit at the moment still binary. I was a little bit disappointed in the commercial uptake of this, but I suppose you have to understand that medical institutions are a bit glacial in their movement. They don't, you know, just snap it up there. But things are happening, and they said they're going to be funded to mid 20. I still think that, you know, the technology is very good. Of course it is. It doesn't compare. There's nothing else out there that compares. But I just can't understand why the uptake hasn't been faster. I just thought it would, you know, really shoot off the shelves kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it hasn't. Maybe that's still going to happen. They are slowly, you know, advancing it, and it's getting there. But I don't know. It's just, you know, look at the chart. They went through almost the perfect storm, Polarian. They went through, you know, they passed two phase threes, which is not a problem. Went for FDA approval and got knocked back. They got, you know, a letter sent back from them saying, no, because they've changed the manufacturer, same spec, everything. And I think that's a bit silly for the management, not to say we've changed the manufacturer since we submitted that. And that was literally our own goal. And then it dropped off a cliff. And then all of a sudden the beer market started. And then people started worrying, oh, it's going to be another year now until they get FDA application in again. And by that time, the funds will be dwindling. And that was in the middle of a beer market. And so it's literally been, you know, I think it could, all they need to do is have a little bit of a rally. And I think the sentiment will change here and people start realizing. But again, it's nowhere near. If you look at the chart there, it's horrible. It's come down, a drop off there. That's the FDA knockback. And since then, it's gone down, down, down. And is it bottoming out? It's still too early. I mean, I like the technology. I wouldn't mind them. I don't know. They can't raise money down here, surely. But it's just, I don't know. Just it's one of those stocks that it'll go crazy. I think when it does, they announce something, it will go mad. And I may even miss out on that. I'll wait for the pullback then. But I want to see some kind of evidence of commercial traction. Yeah. And I also want to see them, you know, have a sort of cash runway there as well, extended maybe.
Yeah, I think the upside catalysts clearly are going to be contracts if they start winning them next year in terms of getting that. And also when it comes to funding, if they've won a few contracts, then this will be taken out. They won't be organic funding. They'll just get taken out, and those will be the two upsides. But I'm with you. There's a lot of uncertainty at the moment. I'm scratching my head likewise, because it's best in class technology, you know, in terms of the sort of commercialization, and you know, that's the key area really. But there's probably easier money to be made elsewhere where you don't have this commercialization drag.
Yeah, you know, exactly. I mean, at the moment, I mean, you know, my portfolio is such that I understand the market turns and pre-revenue, not yet, but I think, because of course, interest rates are still going to stay high for longer. So I don't think it's going to get overnight easy to raise money for companies. So it'll still, so previously in the bull market, I would hold a lot more loss-making companies, and I sort of learned from that. They took a massive hit. And now, you know, my portfolio structure is the way, you know, majority of them are generating money or going to be profitable. I've got one, I think, was it pre-revenue, you know, it's almost Lung Life. I'm waiting for, in fact, what's that about Lung Life? They came out with, should be news.
They basically came out with a statement saying,
Q4,
I think it's
Q4, they said. It would be September.
Or early next year, you know, it was going to be written the next month or so. They're collating all the data. So, you just got to wait and be patient on that one.
Yeah, so that's the only one I sort of that Destiny Farm and Lung Life pretty much are the only ones I hold that are pre-revenue, you know, sort of higher risk but have massive upside potential, and I balance that with, like, you know, fund and generate the stocks revenue. But I do say, a question here actually from who's it, Ben, saying, how do you think the, I mean, it's not your area of expertise, Paul, but how do you think the miners will do in 2024? I think I may buy BlackRock World Mining Trust, which gives good diversification and 7% yield. But they have been hammered, and it's largely down to China, isn't it? You know, and all that. So I think if China, you know, starts recovering a bit, then, you know, they could do very well, I think. And maybe that's, if you're not going to want to research individual companies, that's probably a good play there, a diversification.
I think the other thing, which is real upside, okay, and I know I'm a broken record because I was saying this time last year, if you do, I mean, we had basically President Lezensky going over to see President Biden in the States this week, okay? They had a long chat in terms of the commitment from the US, et cetera. But there's a lot of speculation that at some point there's going to be a ceasefire between, you know, the Ukraine and Russia. Now, if you do get that ceasefire, what is going to happen? There is literally hundreds of billions of rebuilding needed to happen in Ukraine. So who is going to benefit? People who supply the aggregates, the iron ore, the copper. I mean, we're going to see, it's just going to be enormous. Now, who's going to fund it is another cat of fish. I agree, but it's probably going to be the ECB and, you know, sort of like, you know, venture funds and all this sort of stuff, who's going to be doing it. But if you're a miner, essentially you've got a bit of China coming back, you've got the economy not falling off a cliff, and then you've got this enormous, enormous demand over the next 10 years for basically infrastructure in Ukraine, because it's a big country. Let's be clear about it. It's flipping huge. That's going to shoot the lights out in terms of the mining, because they are rock bottom. So I would say, when it comes to sort of mining, I mean, I've been thinking about it myself as optionality. I don't personally, I always struggle predicting where the commodity is going to go to see whether the mining, but let's be clear about it. But they all pay great dividends. They're flipping cheap. And if you do get
big
that,
miners,
ceasefire, they're going to get a high beta triple sort of like, you know, booster rockets.
Yeah, Yeah, well, I mean, that's probably a safer play. You talk about obviously the bigger miners paying dividends, but there are a lot of, you know, in AIM, there's a lot of smaller resource companies. Mm. And I've said before, once the market turns and China picks up, those smaller ones, I'm talking sub 50 million, sub 20 million, there's some of them with decent assets, they will go gangbusters. I mean, I'm not now into resource companies. I was a while back, but a few years back, but not really, about 5 years back, but I'm not now. But I know, and part of me has been a FOMO. I know, you know, resource companies and biotech companies, you know, when they start moving, they really move, explosive movements. And so if you've got, you know, a good junior resource company with a good management team, good assets, in a decent jurisdiction, it'll move very quickly.
But it's just two exactly on that, which, you know, I've been talking about. First, let's do Verici, just had some data. They basically came out with an RNS saying that their Tutivia lead test for kidney transplant diagnostics has basically got peer reviewed in the big American Journal for Transplants, and that, so it basically endorsed all the scientific knowledge and the applicability of this test in across the states, which should help the commercialization next year. And the reason why it sort of fits what you just said, this one could significantly move because we've got an inflection point next year. It obviously signed that agreement with one of the big diagnostics companies out. I can't remember which one it was in the state. It was
let's have a look here.
Slip my mind at what it was. It was the
Thermo Fisher, is it?
Thermo Fisher, yes. They signed that big one, which will generate about $5 million of revenue over the next 12 months, $5 million of revenue over the next 12 months. So that's on the prognostic side. The Tutivia one is obviously is the peer review, and they've got that suite of products. This one could really motor next year. If they hit what the broker's saying, which I think is about $8 million of turnover, and they'll be about sort of EBITDA break even next year, this one's going to absolutely fly. That's definitely one to watch. Could move very, very rapidly. Another one is Bellascura, and they came out that they've just been given got regulatory approval for their portable oxygen concentrator out in Singapore, which then opens the door for all the ASEAN region. So for things like, I think it was Indonesia and Thailand, where they have big COPD sort of problems in terms of breathing, etc. So, and that will be serviced by their partner, Inomax, from China. And again, the shares have been battered. But, if they can start really sort of ramping up that volume, then, they'll do really, really well. And, of course, the States is already ramping up for next year. And they've just about starting, well, they will be soon marketing their new device, which is the Discover as well. So they're both of those stocks have been hammered, you know, but they're in very good position for inflection for next year, as sort of like, you know, these are, you know, sort of fairly small businesses that could move into profitability by the back end of next year.
Obviously Far East in China, COPD is huge. I'm just thinking there, you know, perfect product, perfect market. I'm just thinking that anti-obesity drug in America, if you want to go anywhere, anti-obesity drug America. So many fat people there, it's gonna be, you know.
Well, I mean, just on that, I mean, one of the companies that I own, Roche, okay, it has just bought a company that is doing GLP-1 drugs. It's got an early stage one, bought for about $2.8 billion dollars, and the shares moved up on the back of that. I went for safe defensive pharma at the start of the year because I wanted to get more exposure, and that was a wrong strategy because Roche is down probably 5-10% since the start. I've got a dividend, which is great. Bristol Myers again is probably down 10%, and then the other one, which has just been a nightmare and the biggest of the lot, is Pfizer. And put the chart up on Pfizer.
Yeah,
and
they... So someone commented yesterday, said, "Why didn't Paul look at the chart on this?"
That was you, wasn't it? You prompted that.
On yesterday's Ticket Stock, said, "Why didn't Paul listen to you about the chart on this?" I said, "No."
I'm sitting on this one for a long time, and let's see it come back. I still believe in their pipeline, and I still believe in their expertise and in all things. It's just that they're in the wrong place, the right wrong time, and they got their forecasting totally wrong at the start of the year, particularly for the vaccine stuff, but also for some of their other drugs. And anyway, let's, you know, you it. Am I hugely disappointed? No, but I'm actually quite surprised.
Yes, simply, well, because, I like said yes, I am.
I know, yeah, because I bought it about, I don't know, I think it was like $40 or so, yeah, and I'm nearly down what 45%, and in less than a year. And would you really expect to lose?
No, you wouldn't.
Defensive farmer.
Well, that just shows that betting is, you know, like I said, they tend to come back, don't they? They tend to revert to mean because they're so big. And, yeah, but look at that, it gapped down there, you know, and it kept going down. And all of a sudden, it gapped down again. And just when you think maybe it's at the bottom, it gapped down again. It's almost like getting punched about five times, yeah. Getting up, and then, you know, gut punch there and knocked down again. And, yeah. Oh, my word. But, that's why, you know, I do keep saying fundamentals and technicals sometimes, because if it's in a downtrend, for some reason, it's odd, because I've looked at charts, but I don't believe, people said all the news and the future news is in the chart. No, I don't believe that at all. I don't believe that at all. It's just money flow. But sometimes you'll see a chart trending down, and then you get even worse news coming out. It trends out even more. That was sort of in the trend, almost, and it's just conforming to trend. But I don't believe the future news is in the chart. I just believe that's the present money flow of that stock. Mm. It's being sold, and there's more sellers than buyers. You know, it's as simple as that.
So, yeah, I mean, I look at it big picture. Okay, I know I'm going to balls up on a few stocks. I'm just surprised it's such a big one with such a big sort of IPR heavy in a defensive sector.
Yeah, well, people think small caps are, you know, you'd get a 45% drawdown, but you wouldn't think it happened in a big cap like that, you know.
So, oh, I know, yeah. So yes, I've lost, you know, a reasonable six-figure number on this one, okay, already. So it's not a nice to have, and I wouldn't recommend it. I didn't double down because, you know, I hardly ever double down because I just accept that I am wrong on a few of these. But has the investment thesis changed? The answer to that is, to me, no. My price target has changed because I think when I first started talking about it, I think a sneaky suspicion I had a price target of about, what, $60 or something like that. And I've currently got it at, using the revised numbers, 32. Okay, so my valuation has come down, but I can see upside if they can actually start realizing some of the quality assets that they have in there. But I would not be recommending people getting into this because... They just seem to be accident prone at the moment. I cannot believe how badly what's happened over the last year. But it's just one of those things. You're never going to make, you know, you're never going to be perfect on every single stock. I'm just surprised how badly it's gone. You know.
Yeah, no, that can happen sometimes, can't it? I mean, I've learned. I'm not joking. I keep saying this, but I've learned so much in the last 2 years. It's phenomenal. And even going back 6 months, thinking of some of the stocks I picked, I wouldn't have picked those now. I've learned so much more, you know, and the bear market is for that. And hopefully, it's, you know, like other people who've stuck around and learned, you'll be setting yourself up nicely for a bull market. Because once that starts, you know, like I said, share price rises, and there'll be several legs to this. And I did say yesterday, almost, you know, the you get new money coming in. So the share price will rise, people will invest more and push share prices up. That'll attract more money in. It's self-fueling. And then after about three or four legs of that, you start getting your mates, because you talk about shares and doing well, they'll start joining in. And that'll be towards the top of the market in 5 years' time. And so, but that'll push it. You get that new money coming, push it even higher, almost the frothy bit at the top. Yeah. And that'll be a 5 years' time. That's the time when you've been fully invested from like year two and you've been doing very well. So, it will turn. But it's nice to learn. I'm hoping. I do think it's turning. You know, it's turning.
It is. Yeah. And if you want to, I'll tell you one stock that you may want to have a look at. This is a sensible stock, small cap, that is come off from its lows, but is definitely in the sort of the long term. Sort of put it in your back pocket and let it go. It is Water Intelligence. Okay. And I know we've talked about it before. It came up with the trading update this week. And also I spoke to Paul Jordan of Amati. He's also owning it. And I asked his viewers as well. And essentially what it means, it, you know, what we came down to conclude, it's still pretty damn cheap. It's still pretty much undervalued. They're meeting expectations, not exceeding it. They've got a few headwinds, but they're still growing at organically sort of 6% per annum. And I think that'll accelerate because they seem to be winning new customers for next year. And they're in exactly the right spot, which is leak detection, you know, water preservation out in the States, stormwater management with all the, you know, problems of climate change. And also sort of like, you know, in the UK, they help utilities, you know, sort of like stop all the sewage being washed off from their sewage, you know, their sewers into the rivers and to seas and stuff. So they're in a lovely place. It's going to be regulated spend. And, you know, they're very well positioned. And I would say, you know, I'm just going to hold that one and just let it go. Just let it ride because they're cash generative. They're growing. And it should, in my view, this should be a really low cost to capital type business. It's got cash on the balance sheet. And it's just going to continue doing well, I think, in terms of, yeah. it probably needs, you know, sort of like a more marketing by the company into the sort of market because they seem to be quite quiet. But once they do that and get people familiar more with the and comfortable more with the investment case, then I could see this not dissimilar to where I think their broker Dowgate have got a sort of price target of about £8 on it, which I could definitely see them achieving that, you know, in the fullness of time. But at the moment, you know, if you want a sensible stock, that one's not too out of the question, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look at that. I don't know why I took that off there. I had a smiley face there that I said will come round. But this line I put on last time we chatted about it, I said that's previous support there. And it came down and broke it up above 200 a day. And it sometimes, when it does that, as an aggressive rally, you get profit takers underwater, being underwater for a while, and it'll come round. But now it just needs to break above that line. But you see, it is coming round. It'll consolidate here and slowly move up. The bottom process here can take, you know, weeks to months. But I mean, it will. If it starts breaking above that line again, 410, then it's set up for a nice rally. But that initial rally off the bottom there is very good. It's broke through a day. Mm-hmm. But you often get that. Companies will come down from a long way. Look, it tried to break it there, come down massively, fell off, wasn't ready. But, you know, first time it's broken that, you often get that. A big rally. And then all of a sudden a breather, pull around, settle down, consolidate, and then it'll take another leg up. But that's a good start there. You know, what you need is that to just flatten out a bit and calm down a little bit. But cool. All right, that's it.
Okay, no. Hang on. Oh, right, no, well, okay, let's conclude. Given it's the last one of 2024, right, okay, and we're called hot stocks, okay, give us two names that you think are high risk but very high return, which we haven't talked about so far for 2024. So people could these are things that would you basically got to put in inverted commas and say the upside is very, very high, but the risk is equally high. So take this one with a sort of like a big these with a big pinch of salt. But they've got a decent chance.
Oh, hang on. But no, if that was the case, I'd be in them. I mean, literally, because even though I want high risk reward, but I want them to be not too risky, they'll go bust to go through.
Okay.
I mean, you know, I'll start with one, mate.
Okay. Essensys, which I've talked about, yeah, which is basically does software for office building, flexible office buildings. It's been totally battered. It's about 39p. It started to increase, okay. IWG, which is the Regis Flexible Office Company, which is the world's biggest one, yeah? They came out with some pretty bullish statements in their capital markets day 2 weeks ago. And we had Mark Dixon, the CEO, talking on across from Bloomberg that he was seeing real demand, not so much in the centres, you know, the traditional sort of capitals, but actually in the outskirts where lots of corporates now are using their facilities. And they're seeing real demand for their facilities and the ones they manage, etc. If that's right, then these guys are in exactly the right space. As I've said before, this is a race to get them to profitability and to cash generation for next year before they need to raise more money. But if that's the case, then these can do really, really well. So I would put this one in the, okay, this could be a disaster for next year if they get that cash management wrong. But equally, I could see this going above £1 quite quickly. So I would,
I'll give you one. I think in stocks we weren't holding, but I'll give you one that's been not performing at all, but I still like it and I've not cut it. In fact, I heard your Paul, the guy you were talking to, Intelligent Ultrasound. It's been, literally, it's come down, it's been hammered. And I just think excellent on best in class. GE use all their software, biggest operator in the world, and they are going to be profitable next year. They've got cash to get there. Their growth top line is very good. It's almost doubling the AI every year for the next 3 years. And I just don't know what's going on with the sentiment. It's not right. I did buy it. It was very choppy. It's very liquid. I bought here. It's come down. Now I'm underwater on it, about 20%. But I'm going to hold on because I'm not. I don't have a massive position. That's the way I invest in stocks. I don't take a big position.
Yeah, I would agree. I think
that's a good one to take. To look at.
Okay, I'll give you another one. I mean, these are all in the mold of hot stocks. Okay, so please, investors, these are my final one, which is the most risky of the lot. Okay. Is Sondrel, okay, which is this digital ASCII chip designer. Oof. Exactly. Look at the chart on this one, right?
Jump
my investment. Exactly. Look at that. How much money have I lost on this one? At shed load, basically. I mean,
Silica, which is another one, came out with fundraise this week, and they're only thinking, why are they raising money? 1.56 they raised it. It's a very lumpy sector, isn't it?
I've lost another six figure. I think I'm down. I can't probably about 80% or so. Okay, now what's the investment case? Okay, I'm still in communication with the CEO Graham Curran, actually, and I actually quite rate to a certain extent. They've got great technology in terms of the individuals, etc., to be able to design these. Obviously, there's headwinds in the industry, particularly in Europe, less so in the States, and they need to. Probably they need to raise money. This company says they don't need to raise money, but I think they need to raise money. So under that lens, it could really struggle, okay? The investment thesis in terms of a turning point is that I got an email from Graham, and he's absolutely got the bit between his teeth to turn this one round. And he's a founder. And I actually think I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, because I believe he's really going to sort of and his management team go hell for high water to get this business back on track. And so anyway, solely based on his determination and, ability, I think he's going to get through. Sneak suspicion he's going to get through this. Now, it is only a hunch and it is only a suspicion. And it is extremely, extremely high risk. So again,
yeah. So it's a binary play. I mean, if it works, it's going to boost and go nuts. Otherwise, it's going to go.
And I'd say I'm not buying any more shares of Sondrel, and I'm not buying any more of Essensys either. So I'm not doubling down on both of those.
Yeah.
But I would say is that my perspective for 2024 is such that these ones have got a decent chance of really outperforming the market, because they've been so battered and the news has been so poor. But if you do get less bad news, then let's be clear, 8p, what the hell? Well, let's wait and
one see. One more for me then, and this is annoying for me as well. But I do think, truthfully, I've held on to this a long time. I haven't got a huge position, but it's literally, it was good in that it was holding its own for the last 2 years, and all of a sudden it's been a bit of weakness. I suspect this is down to their PlayStack side. A lot of gaming companies have come out and had bad updates. But to me, that's not the play. It's never been the play. To me, the two plays are Oxygen, which they turned down a bid for 26 million. This company is now at 45 million. Yeah. So that one company is half the value. And Satago is probably more than double, treble that value. And I think Satago is the best in class. And I think it's probably worth about 100 million. It will be to them. So I think some of the parts, just those two businesses on their own, we'll see it's a Trupin valued a lot higher. It's just commercializing this year, Satago. So I think you'll see knockout figures end of next year. And they haven't got, because they've sold one part of the business, they've now got cash to get profitability, and all three parts of that business will be profitable. So I do quite like it, but it's just underperformed. But I do quite like it. I mean, it's not high risk, but I just think it's just been sold off with sentiment of their gaming side, the play stack, which I don't know. There we are, but there we go. Oh, by the way, quickly, do you know how I learned to invest? And what got me going?
Yeah, go for it.
Well, A-level economics, right? 30-odd years ago, in a boring A-level lesson, chart, supply and demand. And Barry Williams, the teacher, said, right, let's do a stocks and shares competition. I was like, what? So we went up to the library. Of course, Financial Times from yesterday was there. There's no internet back then. And if you pick some stocks, you have £1,000. And £1,000? He says, not real. I said, what's the point of this then? And literally, I wasn't into it at all. I was saying, pick a stock. And literally, I got addicted to it. And from that day, I was in. So I've just set up a website called Chairman Investor, right? And I want people to sort of join in, pass it round, And it's literally a fantasy shares competition. You know, by the way, at the moment I'm number one. You get 100 grand, and I got 190. I want to launch it for 2024. Join in championinvestor.co.uk. It's free to join in, and you get to pick five companies maximum in your portfolio, five transactions a day. You get £100,000, and it just, you know, it gives you. And I want people to sort of, this is how I got involved. So I thought, hopefully, people will start just getting involved. You know,
What's the prize for them next year?
Well, exactly. I don't know. Maybe I can get someone, maybe a rich fund manager to sponsor it and get a big prize for someone. But I think it's a way of just gamifying it, and for people maybe A level economics students, or if you can pass it around to people like that, or your sons, your daughters, who you think, you know, it may be handy. So I think investment should be taught in schools. It's not. And I think maybe the best way of doing it is gamifying it, making it a bit fun. Yeah. So I've done that. And hopefully, even if one person this year starts to take investing seriously, it'll have done its job, you know, because I think we should inspire people to invest and learn about companies and businesses rather than sort of Pythagoras theorem, or whatever that I've never ever used in my life before. All the stuff I've learned in school, I never ever use. Investing is the most valuable thing of all, you know, and I didn't learn about it. So anyway, that's what I think.
And I would say, just, I mean, after a year, you know, I'll give you, you know, you've had an up and down year there, Justin. You've ended at 20% plus, and I tip my hat to you, mate. You've stuck through it. It's been a really tough period, and now it's starting to come good. And I think that's something important for all investors, is that you do go through fallow periods and you do go through bear markets and coming through the other end, and it will get better. So, yeah, I mean, Matt, you've done really, really well. Fantastic. And I think the key is that, you know, don't give up at the bottom. You know, that's the key.
Yeah, no. No, I mean, it's been one of the hardest, longest. This is my third sort of bear market now. I was involved in .com. Mm. I was doubling my money overnight. Remember that, when companies just changed the name to .com? That's all they do. And then all of a sudden, it just popped. You don't realize you're in a bubble when you're new. But I lost all the money, pretty much. Yeah. And then in a second, it was a great financial crash. After that, I did well. But now this one has been the longest I've been involved with, because the other two pretty much recovered quickly. So it's been the hardest as well, because I've been more invested, but I've learned so much from it. But here we are. It'll get better. The bull market is coming, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right.
It's around the corner.
All right, then. Okay. Well, happy Christmas, everyone. And you have a great new year.
Happy Christmas. Merry New Year. And we'll catch up in the new year. I've got two new stocks I'll talk to you about in the new year, Paul.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it, mate.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.